Give a little time for the child within you. Don't be afraid to be young and free. Undo the locks and throw away the keys and take off your shoes and socks and run you.
I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
And this is
Jordan,
Jesse, go!
Icicles, tricycles, ice cream, candy, lollipops, popsicles, licorice sticks, Solomon, Grundy, Raggedy Andy, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, home free.
This week, gay uncles, family feuds, presidential controversies, and the Look Who's Talking movies. Let's go. Welcome to Jordan, Jesse, Go. I am Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Today we are recording our introduction. Every week we record the introduction from a different place. This week we're in Iceland at a bar.
More spirits, Bjorn, is what I'm saying to someone because we're in a place where that's appropriate.
Coming up later on in the show, we'll talk with a couple of presidential candidates and sort of get a look at the serious side of Jordan Jesse Go. We're going to answer some personal questions, which is always important, in my opinion. I don't know what you think about that, Jordan.
I mean, basically, we're operating in a genre of podcast, the Two Guys Chatting podcast, where vanity is really important.
That's true. I think it's the driving force behind this whole operation.
Right. So, I mean, if we didn't get really self-indulgent, then I think we'd be doing a disservice to the listener.
Exactly. That's a really good point, Jordan. I think that's a good way of framing it and looking at it.
Thank you.
Speaking of framing and looking at, this has nothing to do with framing and looking at. Last week on the show, you were asking the question, should you get the Nintendo, what's it called,
Game Boy Micro or Nintendo DS? I've got a new job, which is going to require a little bit of traveling. I thought a handheld video game would make that more pleasant for me, and I wondered which one to get, and the overwhelming response was for the Nintendo DS. So
we got so many like calls and so many posts on the message boards about whether the fact that you should definitely pick the Nintendo DS. This is a product that apparently has a very passionate following.
Yeah, it absolutely does, and it's strange. I mean, because would you agree in saying that that is the topic that's gotten the most response since we've been doing this show?
I would agree, and I think I wonder what that means.
Yeah, it was part of such a cool episode too. I mean, that was just kind of a thing we mentioned, but then later in that episode, we talked to Andrew W.K. He talked about his crazy, you know, music conference with Hanson. He talked about, you know, a bunch.
You would think that the combination of Andrew W.K. and Hanson would generate more response than the question, should I buy a Nintendo DS?
Yeah.
Or a Nintendo Advanced Micro?
Yeah, but apparently that was the hot button issue in that episode.
One of the big points in favor of the Nintendo DS that I heard from everyone was a video game called Nintendogs,
where you raise a dog and sometimes put a hat on it.
Now, you get a stick, like a pointer stick. The Nintendo DS comes with a pointer stick, like a Palm Pilot or something. And I think you can either pet your dog with the stick or poke it with the stick.
Yeah.
That was a big selling point that we heard. I heard that from, I think, three different listeners. Emailed or called or posted on the message board just to let us know specifically the different things you could use the stick for in Nintendogs. Jordan, if you get the Nintendo DS, I want you to get this game called, that I read about on the internet, called Electroplankton.
Okay, I'll get Electroplankton.
I think it involves some kind of worm making music, swimming through a magic electrical ocean or something. I don't know, but I'm 1,000 I'm kicking it up. I'm 1,000% in support of it.
Fair enough. Electroplankton it is.
And can you get a brain attack or whatever that one is called? Where?
Oh, right. A brain age.
Yeah.
Where it tests how smart you are. Yeah, I'll get that.
Okay, because I want to know how smart you are in years.
Right. Why wouldn't you?
We discussed on a previous program the fact that you never expected to be an Xbox person until you happened to get an Xbox for free because of your job in the entertainment industry.
Right.
Now, you actually got a new video game thing
for
free because
of
your...
And I'm a little remiss to turn this show into Jordan Jesse video game chat, but I mean, but apparently people are into it.
Lord knows you are.
I'm fine to talk about that.
Here's Jesse's video game update. I beat a couple new missions in Vice City.
Nice.
That's all I got.
Nice. Are you going to... What are you going to work on? Battle Arena Toshinden next?
I don't know what that is.
Now that you're... Anyway.
Something.
That's an older video game.
Something Neo Geo.
Yeah, Neo Geo. And I hope to parlay this into maybe a discussion of a larger issue rather than just dorking out. But if we just dork out, whatever.
That's fine.
Yeah. It seems to be what the people want.
So, spill the beans,
okay.
Jordan.
My new job, my old job, I got the Xbox.
Right.
My new job, I got Nintendo Wii.
Nintendo Wii!
So I'm sure people are aware of the Wii. I mean, if you're not, it's Nintendo's new system, and it's kind of got these crazy wireless controllers.
Nunchucks.
And you use it to bowl and you use it to sword fight, and it's the whole thing is very fun. Absolutely new sincerity.
There's no the buttons are much less important compared to the waving around of the stick.
Yeah,
which
one
is
of the
good.
One of the games that came with one of the goals is to shake ants off a banana so a monkey can eat it.
And Jordan, I should interject here and say that one of the reasons I'm a big supporter of this is that I've never been able to maintain the disconnect between moving my guy on the screen and moving my controller. Like, to this day, like, if I'm moving left, the whole controller is swerving violently to the left.
Yeah, I was wondering, there's a couple things that bother me about when people are playing video games on TV and in movies. And one, it's that they're moving the controller like violently while they're playing. And my thing is like, who the fuck does that? Am I guess you're the one that's based on.
Yeah.
And my second complaint about that sort of stuff is when you hear the video game on TV, like even now, I heard this currently. Like, this is something I heard recently. They have, like, an Xbox. The controller's right. They have the current controller, but there's Pac-Man sounds. There's some weird public domain video game sound box that people use, and it's just Pac-Man noise. Like, the whoop, 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 whoop. I'm like, come on. Like, get some gunshot noises. Get some... I mean, it's so ridiculous.
It's 2007.
Yeah, it'd be like if someone's, like, in the car... If someone turned on the radio on TV and it's like, "Won't you come home, Bill Bailey?" came on or something. Like, you people, you go, "What the fuck is that?" That's totally not appropriate.
The motions that people make when they play a video game in a television or a movie just have no relationship to what playing a video game is like. They hold the controller and they just go like, push, 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 push.
Yeah, I mean, it's like in a Hitchcock movie where people are
driving
the rear projection, they're just like waving the wheel crazily, but the car isn't doing anything. It's just like this weird movie driving. Anyway, there's a weird movie video game playing too that's totally not based in anything.
Jordan, let me ask you this question.
Okay.
You're the kind of guy who would wait for a while to get an advanced video game system.
Yeah, I mean, I think we devoted a segment early on to my love of video games, but also my frugalness was also an issue. And I usually wait
miserliness.
Till, yeah, you might call it. And you know, I'm the kind of person who waits till something costs. I don't reserve things. I don't wait in line for it. I wait till it drops significantly in price to get it. So it's kind of unusual for me. It's definitely out of character that I have kind of these two super current video game systems in my house. It's great and I love it. It's kind of strange for me, and I find myself, like, I want to tell people about it. Like, I want to have friends come over and play, and I want to tell people that I got this, but every time I preface it was like, hey, guess what I got free at work? Like, I don't, like, you know, like, you don't, like, people don't need to know that, but for some reason I feel like I need to preface it. I need to say, just so you know, I didn't, you know... And it's not like I couldn't afford to do it. It's not like I couldn't, you know, I don't have $200 to go out and get a Wii. I mean, it's totally plausible, and it's not super decadent. It's not like, hey, get, I just had a cocaine party.
Because Jordan, I mean, you're a guy who makes a, you have a real job in the entertainment industry. You make for a single guy what would be called a middle class living.
Sure.
A solidly middle class living. You know, you make, you have a roommate, you're not living extravagantly housing costs wise.
But for some reason and I guess maybe this even goes back to my miserliness. I guess maybe this is even part of, you know, where it springs from, is that I'm like self-conscious about people thinking I'm wealthy.
Let me ask you this question, though, Jordan. Do you think it has to do with miserliness or class consciousness? Because one of the things that I was thinking about when I was wondering about this for you was you grew up in this really weird place, class-wise, which is Orange County.
Right.
And Orange County, for those who don't know, is kind of like a, it's kind of like a parody of a rich Southern California place, but it also has areas and parts of it which are very much not of that.
Yeah, it does. And
but from what I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you kind of grew up with a lifestyle that was kind of in between those two things in a weird way.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly lived in kind of a nice neighborhood, and I don't know if this is just kind of typical family stuff, or if this was, you know, kind of unique to my experience. But I mean I've kind of alluded to my dad before, kind of making kind of crazy, bizarre money, business job choices, but he absolutely did. And
didn't he come home one time with an old-timey?
Yeah. He was always coming home with kind of bizarre things. Giant stone angels, weird Warhol-esque paintings of Napoleon. And it's one time with, you know, kind of this, I don't know if you remember 101 Dalmatians, Cruella de Vil's car.
Right.
Kind of this long in the front, single cab car. Yeah. And he totally just drove one of those home one time without telling anyone. It was just this random bizarre thing that created so much tension in the house. Anyway, so what I'm saying is that I think money problems were always kind of a thing in my house, and and the kids, my sister and I, were always made really aware of it. Like, really, like, you know, things could go south at any minute, I think, was something we were kind of always being told. So it might have been unfounded or overly dramatic or something like that. But I mean, we never had to, you know, move into a tenement or something like that. But so anyway, so yeah, I think that might be part of it, is that, you know, we grew up in a pretty opulent place, but we're always kind of had this weird, you know, we're always teetering on the edge.
I feel kind of a weird class difference in living in Los Angeles relative to living in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I think San Francisco, just as a place, is like alarmingly rich.
Right, right.
Partly just because it's so expensive to live there, because it's so physically small.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like. Most kinds of conspicuous consumption are kind of verboten there, and people, I think, are often embarrassed to be seen as rich there.
Right, right.
Whereas Los Angeles seems like a culture where, like, I feel like I've seen more European luxury cars in like 2 months in Los Angeles than I saw in my entire life in rich-ass San Francisco. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
I wonder if you, and I know that in your career you've also, you know, spent a lot of time with people who got jobs through sort of patronage and
uncles. Yeah, so there's
nepotism.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. So it's strange. I mean, I am kind of self-conscious about, you know, being one of those guys, you know, or being seen as one of those guys.
I know I am. I'm filled with class resentment. I'm like, class resentment I mean, the only person I know who has more class resentment than I do is my stepmother. My stepmother is from Belfast and grew up in a family with this, with her father died when she was very young, I think 4 or 5. And she grew up with, God, how many brothers and sisters does she have? I think 9 or 8 or 9. They were Catholic in Belfast with just her mother's income. Her mother was not affluent at all. And my stepmother just simmers with class resentment at the slightest suggestion of anything that might potentially include class resentment. So, like, she's got me beat a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think watching the neighborhood where I grew up change from a really mixed working class neighborhood to a neighborhood that I can't afford to live in has filled me with so much class resentment that I, like, have a hard time consuming conspicuously. But, I mean, I had a weird situation, sort of like you growing up in Orange County. I mean, I grew up in this really, like, sort of tough working class neighborhood, but at the same time, I was going to private school. You know, I was like the scholarship kid at the, especially when I went to middle school. I went to kind of a really fancy middle school in the suburbs. And so I was kind of taking a van to the burbs to visit the rich kids.
Right.
And they would always be like, "Oh, it's ski week." And we're like, "Ski week? What's ski week?"
What's ski?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, nothing. I mean, one of the things I remember being really mad about, just this time that stands out of making me really angry, is I worked at this coffee shop in college, and kind of the thing was they took the tip money. They didn't divide it up. They took the tip money and, you know, kind of bought. They had kind of a big beer blowout with the tip money and bought everyone kind of a commemorative coffee shop sweatshirt. Like at the end of the year, and then they donated the rest to charity, and they got to, you know, everybody got to vote on the charity they thought it should go to, and so they put up a thing in the back room, like vote where the money should go, and you know there was your standard, you know, your Planned Parenthoods, your Mumia related charities, and but then someone had just written in, give it to poor college students. And, like, it really upset me. Like, come on. Like, all right. Granted, I know, you know, I don't know. Maybe you're eating a lot of ramen or something, but you're going to college. Like just the fact that you're at college, I mean, means you're not, you know, you're not starving on the street, you know? It's like, come on. People would kill to be at college. So it's like, I mean, I fucking hated that. Like, oh, help the, you know, the starving college students. I had to grilled cheese at every meal. I just like that. There's so gross to me, but
I think there's a big difference between the kind of poverty that you hear people who grew up in a middle-class situation describing, which involves kind of having to live at a really low standard of living,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of poverty where there are very real possible consequences for something going wrong. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the difference between, you know, just kind of living in a shitty apartment with
right.
4 roommates and, you know, knowing that if, you know, you had some kind of health problem, you wouldn't be able to pay for medical care because, you know, nobody in your... It's not like you could just
right, yeah.
move back in with your parents in their extra room or, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's strange. I mean, that's really unsavory to me, but at the same time, isn't my thing with the Wii, like insisting that everyone know that I got it for free. Like, isn't that kind
isn't
of the same thing?
Isn't that a little bit
thing?
Over the top?
Yeah.
Is that the same thing in the opposite direction? Is that kind of what you're wondering?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but I mean, my insistence on everyone knowing that I'm not rich, like, you know, me, like, that being important to me.
What about my insistence on describing my working class neighborhood that I grew up in 4 times in every Jordan Jesse Go broadcast?
Yeah, it's weird. So
if you have suggestions about handling this, you can call us at 206-984-4FUN.
Have suggestions on how to relieve liberal guilt...
We're really doing hot button issues. I mean, we've got presidential yeah. candidates coming up and everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't we just, can we go online and just give Barack Obama some money now? That would probably help things.
He's black, but not too black.
No, absolutely not.
I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
It's Jordan Jesse Go. Welcome back to Jordan, Jesse, Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Jordan, for the past 13 episodes, we'd done 13 episodes before, we had kept the show completely apolitical.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of felt like, I don't know, like we're related to a public radio show. I think there should be, to some extent, like a public service element.
Right. Yeah, no, I could see how you would think that. No, I mean, it's our duty as... I mean, we're media bigwigs, and it's our duty to make sure that people aren't just entertained but also informed.
Exactly, and so that's why we've decided to use this powerful platform that we have. The literally hundreds upon hundreds of people who listen to Jordan Jesse Go when all their other podcasts have been listened to, to you know, find room for political discourse and dialogue.
Right. So next week we promise we'll get back to the fun party chat, the
About video games.
Yeah, video games, the frivolities. But please bear with us, and hopefully you'll get something out of this.
Of course, in our political life, every 4 years there's something big that happens. It's a presidential election. And so we've decided to take this opportunity of the presidential election to welcome one of the candidates to the show. And we'll hear from another candidate a little bit later on because we want to make sure that we're, you know, doing something.
Equal time, they call it.
Exactly. He's running for the presidential nomination. I've only got some pretty brief notes about his platform and positions, but we'll talk to him and see if we can kind of get a boxers or briefs flavor of what kind of guy he is. His name is Brian Feldman. He has a long list of credits in Hollywood, but he's a newcomer to the political game. Brian, welcome to Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate you bringing me on here. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure to have you. You have this really impressive resume of Hollywood credits. What would you say is was your proudest moment in, I guess, about 25 years now of working in Hollywood?
25 years. It's actually 25 years
exactly.
Well, the thing that I'm most proud of, and probably, you know, fortunately, the thing that I'm most known for, a lot of people in Hollywood don't get that. The thing that they're most proud of is also the thing they're most known for would be, the Look Who's Talking series.
Sure.
Look Who's Talking To, T-O-O, and Look Who's Talking Now.
Right. And, wait, Brian, when?
Now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Often when a movie makes it big, like Look Who's Talking did, they'll find, you know, the writer moves on and they'll find someone else to write the sequel.
No, but I would not let that baby, so to speak, out of my control. I didn't want... The first movie, you know, I just gotten those voices so right, you know, and it was just pitch perfect that I didn't want the sequel to fall in another screenwriter's hands. So I worked really hard and I got a deal that I would get to write the second and the third movie. And also, in my contract, I get to write the next five, knock on wood. I don't want to say if they ever make them. I say when they make them. I have
that
the
kind of contractual
already.
Language is important.
Yeah, because you don't want to, you know, you hear that they're making Look Who's Talking 4, and you're like, what happened? How'd that happen?
How come no one called me?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Can I ask you this question? Do you control rights to the franchise? And it is a pretty powerful Hollywood franchise, especially with people like John Travolta and Kirstie Alley attached.
Great people, by the way. They're...
Do you control the rights to that franchise outside of the film mode? If there's novelizations, for example, do you control that as well?
Yeah, well, I wrote that. I wrote the movies. Amy Heckerling directed. I want to give credit where credit's due. And as far as the novelizations go, I have the rights of those, and I actually wrote them. So, like, the Scholastic novelizations that you probably all got through book orders. I wrote those. And those novels are great opportunities to kind of get in ideas that you wanted to get in the screenplay but just didn't fit. So I remember for the novelization for Look Who's Talking To, there was an entirely new baby character who always wanted those E.L. Fudge cookies. The baby would always come in, and we worked really hard to make this a catchphrase in the novelization. Where are my cookies at? The baby would always say.
Was it an ethnic character?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Urban?
Yeah.
And this is just for me, but when I wrote it, cookies was always spelled with a Z.
That was always my favorite in the series of novelizations. I don't know. Which would you say was your favorite in the movies? I'm thinking Look Who's Talking Now, but it's hard. It's really hard for me to pick.
That's the fan favorite, is the Look Who's Talking Now novelization. Jordan, did you have one you liked?
Well, I mean, I'm a Look Who's Talking purist. I mean, I mean, the other ones were great, and I love seeing them. But I mean, just that magic that I felt reading the first novelization of the first movie was pretty incredible.
Like your first time with anything, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to
top. No, I mean, I remember when the magic.
You mean sex? So your first time with sex?
I guess I could.
It was probably better. I mean, I don't want to say
it was
better
than your first time. Well, yeah. Thank you. That's a huge compliment. And I've heard that before many times. People just come up to me.
At readings and signings?
Just on the street, people will know that I wrote the Look Who's Talking movies.
Well,
and,
I see you're wearing a Look Who's Talking t-shirt right now.
The famous poster where Mikey is chewing on the words.
Uh-huh.
not my idea. That was Jay Rosenthal?
Uh-huh.
I want to get his name right.
But your
idea. He's dead. I mean, he died 10 years ago.
But your idea to wear the shirt, which I think is a masterstroke.
Yeah, well, I don't think I really need to. I mean, people would know that I wrote that, but I'm just proud of the movie. And I got a bunch of different Look Who's Talking shirts. This is the one I wear the most.
Crew gift, I think they call it at the end.
Yeah. The other one I have is like a sweatshirt, and it's embroidered, but it gets very hot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a Look Who's Talking Now, and it's embroidered on the front, and then the two dog characters are embroidered on there, but it's very heavy. It adds about 20 pounds every time I put it on. Just the magic. You were talking about the magic. I just remember the magic when I first came up with the idea for Look Who's Talking. My wife had just, we had just adopted a baby, and she brought it home, and we were holding it, and I remember looking right into the eyes of the baby, and I was like, and I went, "Where am I at?" You know, what's this new place? And then, you know, that's when you as a screenwriter go, "Idea," write that down.
Yeah.
You know, so all through the week, I was just, you know, maybe irritating my wife a little bit. Just, you know, I would have the baby go, "What's this?" You know, just kind of funny stuff, like really funny stuff, like a baby, you know, looking at a lamp and going, "What is that?"
I don't think people appreciate the craft. You know what I mean? Just the craft that goes into that kind of thing.
You're right. I don't feel like people appreciate it. You can look at my mantle. There's no Oscars on the mantle, and there is room for them. I made room, even though I wasn't nominated. On the night of the Oscars,
there was buzz, though.
I was hoping that maybe there'd be some write-ins. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, I voted for you three times.
Thank you.
In the People's Choice. I'm not a member of the Academy, but I am. I'm qualified for People's Choice and also Blockbuster Awards.
Oh, well, thank you, Jesse. That means so much in this business to kind of have, you know, that affirmation. I had a friend who worked at the People's Choice Awards, and he told me that I was very close to getting nominated for Look Who's Talking Now.
Well, that's really good to hear.
So, I mean, we are here because you're entering the political arena.
Right, we didn't come here to... I love talking about...
I just... I think the fans...
LWT.
The fans would kill me if I didn't bring this up before we got into the heady political debate. You mentioned future Look Who's Talking movies. Mm-hmm. Can you break any stories here on Jordan Jesse Go? Is there any?
I am what is contractually obligated to not talk about the work, but you guys, I'll make an exception.
Come on.
We're friends. We're friends.
All right. Well, in the fourth one, well, you know, the first one was Mikey, the baby
right,
talks.
Right, just Mikey.
Yeah. Second one, Mikey and his sister, right?
Right.
Third one, pets. Uh-huh. You know? And the fourth one is actually...
Drum roll, please.
The Kirstie Alley and John Travolta characters' thoughts. And thank you. That laugh lets me know that that idea is going to work when you see it in theaters.
I can basically see the whole movie right now. Mm-hmm.
I mean, every time I see Kirstie Alley or John Travolta on television in newsprint, what I'm wondering is what are they thinking?
So wait, mm-hmm. Will the voices of their thoughts be different celebrities?
Yes, like, it won't be Kirstie Alley and John Travolta. I've come to find that in life, our thoughts aren't in our voices. Have you guys noticed that? You've noticed that. Our thoughts aren't in our voices. So
in my mind, my voice sounds less like my voice and more like, I don't know how to describe
it.
Well,
I can do that.
Have you ever heard an audiobook of the Dalai Lama?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds like. You know, like one of his books.
Yes. You're dead on. I actually have this ability to know what your celebrity thought voice is. Jordan, I'm looking at you. Michael J. Pollard.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
Character actor Michael J. Pollard. And with Kirstie Alley, her voice would have been done by Lisa Gibbons of Entertainment Tonight.
Wow.
Co-host. And John Travolta's would have been Sam Donaldson.
Brian, if I could ask you a question.
Sure.
What I'm hearing from you is these are professional actors. We're talking about Kirstie Alley. We're talking about John Travolta. Mm. I'm surprised, and I think some people might be surprised, that their internal monologues come not from other actors or other celebrities, pseudo-celebrities, but more news people, members of the news media. Mm-hmm. Do you think you have some? Have you heard that from studio execs or anything like that?
That was one of the first notes we got. I remember as soon as I stepped foot into the room, mid sentence they were saying, "Why? Mm-hmm. Why American broadcasters doing the voices?"
I mean, you think maybe they want celebrities with proven box office mojo? Jeff Foxworthy or
Michael J. Fox at the time, not now.
Yeah. Right. Stallone was thrown out. Eddie Murphy, all these names thrown out. But this is the time when you guys just let
vision.
This be a lesson. You protect your vision. And I if you guys can look, I took my hands out with my palms out, and I like kind of in a stop motion. I put them right in the face of the head of 20th Century Fox, my palms right in his face, and I went, "No. No. No."
One, two, three times?
Yep. And he said, "You got it. Sam Donaldson and Lisa Gibbons, they're on the phone right now." And they were. And then he pressed a button and I talked to them. Offered them the deal. They said, "Let's think about it."
So it's been in talks. It's in. They call that in turnaround, I think, in Hollywood.
It's been in talks since early 1994, and we're just starting to break through. It's been a long, ongoing process. Lisa's timetable is so full.
Let me ask you this question: we're having so much fun talking about Look Who's Talking, Look Who's Talking To, Look Who's Talking Now.
Mm-hmm.
The reason you're here isn't because you're a Hollywood script doctor, super writer.
No.
The reason that you're here is because you've chosen to take a leap into politics.
That's right. That just seems like the natural extension of my work. People would see the movies, the Look Who's Talking movies, and they're like, "So when are you running for office?"
Right.
I would hear that all the time because it was so political.
I would imagine that after Look Who's Talking Now, a few people ask you to run for dog catcher.
Jesse.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
I know,
you are a pill.
But you're the humorist here.
Can I use that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you credit me.
Special thanks. We'll work it out later.
Okay.
I have a friend, a lawyer friend.
Can I have an associate producer?
Jesse?
Associate producer?
Okay. All right.
It's a deal.
It is a good line. It's worth it.
Can I touch Lisa?
She actually has this problem with being touched, which I found out the hard way. I tried touching her face.
You don't, no, don't.
No, it was just trying to touch her face. It wasn't right. anything.
It was just kind of a, it's just you were just telling her to no.
I was saying,
something.
Well, because she wanted to change a line. And I said, Lisa, and I put my palms out up against her face. And I went, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. But I just did it twice with her.
Only twice. Yeah. Once, twice.
I mean, mm-hmm. you don't work like Robert Altman. You don't encourage your actors to improvise. And
no, I hate any sort of spontaneity in an actor. I stay on the set of all the movies. A lot of times writers aren't welcome on the set, but I kind of finagled my way in, and just to make sure that the script stayed letter by letter.
Well, Lisa Gibbons does have a reputation for ad-libbing.
She does. If you look at a lot of her Entertainment Tonight tapes,
she goes
into voices. She'll kind of have a stream of conscious thought. That's why she's often considered America Broadcasting's Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You'll hear that a lot.
Anyway, back to politics. The reason that you took this step to go from screenwriter to presidential candidate, was it just popular demand, or was there something else that you wanted out of going into politics?
Well, it did come from popular demand. You know, I'd go to a lot of the LWT conventions, and fans would kind of come up to me and say, you know, when are you running? You know, Dan, we want you in office. And so, you know, you can't help but hear that. And you go back home and you think, oh, well, you know, what would it be like to kind of run for office? But then it does come from a personal place of wanting change. You know, I look around. You just have to stick your head out your house window to notice that things aren't as good as they used to be. And you get frustrated and you're like, well, if I can, and I hate saying this, but if I can use my celebrity to change things, then great. And I, you know, I don't want to just be a spokesperson for, you know, this association or this charity group. I want to get in office, roll up my sleeves, and get my hands a little dirty.
How did you feel in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina?
I was devastated.
Like New Orleans.
Yeah. Well, I'm originally from New Orleans.
Oh, wow. Just like jazz music.
Well, my father, a lot of people don't know this, is Harry Anderson of TV's Night Court, the magic judge.
Really?
Now, a lot of people say, when they hear that he's my father, they're like, wait a minute, aren't you both in your mid-50s?
And have different last names.
You could see that my eyes were filling up with tears there, and you wanted to...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What in particular, you mentioned looking out your window and noticing that mm-hmm. that things weren't as great as they could be. Was there anything in particular that was the tipping point?
Oh, you know, my campaign, the platform that I'm running on, it is just, you know, the basic things. You know, I want education reform. I think, you know... equal rights in this country. I think, you know, there's still a long road ahead there. And then thirdly, I think America wants to hear their babies talk. That is what I'm learning on my screenplay tours. On my screenplay readings, I go into a bookstore. A lot of times they're not ever advertised or even or allowed by the bookstores, but I usually just find a spot, usually in the youth fiction area, the young adult section, and I just...
Kind of let it rip.
And a crowd usually forms. You know, it's usually three or four very kind elderly people, and they sit, they listen, and then afterwards I'm like, do you know the movies? And they go, no. What?
And they do they share their priorities with you, their priorities mm-hmm. for America?
And they, yeah, and they go, that's a very interesting idea. Babies talking, I like that. I want that to happen. That's what they say to me time and time again. I want that to happen. And so I got a science buddy of mine, and he's actually figured out, it's just in the prototype stages, but I think in 6 months we'll have this completed. It's actually a voice box that fits on an infant's throat mm-hmm. and then a wire that connects.
How is it affixed to the throat, if you don't mind my asking?
Like small hooks.
Metal hooks.
Metal very, very sharp hooks.
To keep them in, to sort of to hold them in place.
Right.
Because the baby's skin is very...
supple.
Malleable.
Malleable, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say elastic or... Mm-hmm. So it takes something quite sharp to pierce it.
Yes. And you... So those are what the hooks are for. And then there's a wire, kind of like a, you know, oh, well, like this microphone. See this wire
right
here?
Yeah, I see that.
And it fits into the back of the head. We kind of just tape it there.
Can I ask you a question, Brian?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'd read about this plan before.
Yeah, it's all over.
Yeah, I mean, it's been in the papers from the New York Times to the Newark Star Eagle.
I think I heard about it on Coast to Coast,
right,
with Art Bell.
And what I hear every time is, sure, there's a large portion of America that are very excited about this. Then there's another portion of America who think this is unconscionable, who think that it's in some way tantamount to murder. And I don't want to call those people, you know, the religious right,
mm-hmm,
or...
but they are.
But, I mean, I think that's, you know... That's a fair enough shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
What is your response to these people? Because obviously, you know, they can't be. They're often perceived as kingmakers in the United States.
Yes.
That lobby,
right? Well, I, you know, and this is where I got to be a politician. I can't say forget those people. You know, get out of here. I can't say that to them. I can't say no to them. I have to work with them. So I have been meeting with representatives of the quote unquote religious right to talk about this, because their feelings are, you know, babies is babies. Babies shouldn't be talking. And
right,
we kind of sit down and, you know, I say to them, who do you think has the purest mind? Who do you think is untainted by the evils of the world? Babies, what could they say to us? What wisdom could we gain from them? Just the pure of heart.
Would babies pray?
And the answer is yes. In some of our tests, some babies are praying as early as 2 months. And praying our prayers, Hail Marys, our fathers.
Can I ask you this question? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to interject here. I know that equality is one of your core values.
Yeah.
Many, many presidential candidates who have that as a value want to often promise to say that their cabinet will look like America. That was, mm-hmm, one of the promises that Bill Clinton made, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Do you see a role for babies in your government, talking babies?
Yes. The problem is I want my whole cabinet to be babies made up of infants, no older than 8 months. 8 months is kind of the cap. The problem is they're hard to deal with because, you know, once I get into elected office, they're going to be too old. So I'm actually just going around to women who are only, you know, a month along into their pregnancy and kind of feeling things out, putting my ear up against their stomach. A lot of people don't know this, but the best way to communicate with a baby is to have the mother open her mouth and you talk into the mouth to the baby.
Well,
and so that's kind of how I've been like feeling out. And there is a mother. Her name is Judy. I'm not going to give her last name out because honestly, I don't want other politicians taking away this baby for their own purposes. But I've talked to the baby inside of her, and he is brilliant. And I think he's going to be great in the Department of Agriculture.
Well, Brian, I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk
thank
with
you.
Us. I mean, it was really a pleasure. I know that you're headed out on the campaign trail. Do you think you might be willing to check in with us every couple of weeks and
sure.
see how things
yep,
are going
just
in the campaign?
Pick up a payphone in the local truck stop and let you know how the campaign's going. I'd love to, love to, love to, love to. And remember, all of this started with me looking at my baby and going, "Where am I?
Right.
Where?" And that's how I always wanted Bruce Willis to deliver the lines, is kind of more like a baby, like, "Where am I?
Right.
Who are you? What is this?" He improvised most of those lines in the that you hear in the movie. He felt it necessary to kind of put jokes in, but I just wanted the baby to be filled with wonder. Just, what is this?
Just asking questions about everything.
Yeah, all the lines were questions. Yes, all of the lines were questions.
Wow. That's a fun fact for all the
Yeah, it was just all questions about the baby's boys. Surroundings and what it was looking at and wondering what it was.
Well, Brian Feldman, thank you again.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. This is the first radio show I've done, first any show I've done, and it was very exciting for me. Thank you.
Brian Feldman, presidential candidate and Hollywood legend, best known for writing the screenplays of the Look Who's Talking films. We'll be back on Jordan, Jesse, Go in just a moment. Jordan, did you know that Jordan, Jesse, Go is supported in part by the good people at Project Breakout?
I did know that, and when I think about it, it makes me feel nice.
Project Breakout is a website. They're running contests in lots of different areas of expertise, including right now viral video, which maybe it doesn't have any expertise in it, but they're starting up a comedy contest.
Getting kicked in the crotch is expertise.
Okay, I'll accept that. They're on the internet at projectbreakout.com. Right now, they're accepting video submissions. You can enter the contests and win huge amounts of money. I can't remember how much they're giving away, thousands of dollars, I think. Mm-hmm. And when we get the video, when we get the comedy contest going in a week or two, we'll be asking you to enter your comedy videos as well. Projectbreakout.com. This is Jordan, Jesse, Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
It's time for personal questions for Jesse and Jordan.
Thanks, Paul Schaefer.
Do you like Paul Schaefer?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good, because sometimes people say mean things about Paul Schaefer, and I think Paul Schaefer's kind of fantastic.
Yeah, great. No, it's fantastic.
I think he's totally great.
People,
I mean,
anyone who says something mean about him is way off base.
Yeah, I think they're nuts. I mean, he's so Paul Schaefer-y.
Absolutely. Who else is that Paul Schaefer-ish?
Absolutely no one. And he's a genuinely, how many sidekicks are genuinely funny?
Yeah, actually funny, great band leader.
Great foil.
Absolutely.
Wonderful foil. Keep it up, Paul Schaefer. Okay, we're doing personal questions. We've got a topic on the forum where people can ask us personal questions, and we'll answer them on the air if we like them.
Yeah.
Let's start with this personal question. This is from someone named Stoikal. I don't know what that means.
Hard to say.
Do you have a gay uncle?
Yes, I absolutely have a gay uncle. Uncle Joey.
Uh-huh.
Who lives with his roommate, Uncle Frank. That was kind of always how it was explained to us, and I kind of had to figure out that he was gay.
How does your that's interesting to me that he's the roommate, but he's also an uncle.
Yeah, it was my family growing up was pretty liberal about assigning uncle status to someone.
Okay.
I had a couple of with my dad's buddies or something that they...
A couple of his bar buddies.
Yeah, and I think it was just something that they... I mean, he in particular thought was kind of cute, was like, say that this is your uncle, and
Right. Freely distributed uncle status.
Right, but so me having a wayward or, extra uncle wasn't unusual to me. So, I mean, I didn't really think about it.
How did your family feel about having it? Did you get some kind of impression of what it was like to have a gay uncle? Like, what did your parents think of the whole prospect?
I would always have a really good, and well, here's the thing, is like my extended family and my dad's family especially is very, very country, let's say. They all live in kind of a combination of Texas and Tennessee, and from what I can remember, we didn't visit them a whole lot, but from what I remember, are kind of cartoons of people who would live in Texas and Tennessee. Talk about how a restaurant used to be better until black people started working there. I had an uncle who was. I don't know, who lived on a boat. They were
that could be kind of cosmopolitan.
Not in the way that he lived on a boat.
Okay.
His
boat was just moored in someone's backyard.
Right, exactly. It was on cinder blocks. going over to their houses was always a little uncomfortable and a little sad. I remember thinking this is kind of sad.
Was your gay Uncle Joey related to your mother or your
My dad? He's on my dad's side. My dad comes from a big family. Going over to gay Uncle Joey's house, totally different experience. He had a talking cockatiel.
Wow.
We would always watch videos of taped Broadway shows, which. I mean, as a kid and also in high school, I was always really interested in theater. It was really like,
hey, Broadway shows are really fantastic for children and gays.
Yeah, absolutely. And always had a little foofy dog and a waterbed. Also, Uncle Joey had a waterbed.
You're saying is that your Uncle Joey was a parody of a homosexual in the same way that your other relatives on your father's side were parodies of country folk?
Yeah. I mean, kind of.
Uncle Joey Tony Randall?
Yes, he is Tony. No, Tony Randall is like a famous womanizer.
Yeah, he is, but he's also a parody of a homosexual when he's not.
Okay.
I mean, he's a gotcha. Parody of those other qualities of being a homosexual.
I hear you. As opposed to Randall-esque.
Lisping. He doesn't lisp or anything.
So, yeah, I mean, really, and I didn't, you know, and I didn't know, I didn't put two and two together until like high school. Like, oh, well, Uncle Joey's probably gay and Uncle Frank is probably another
Are they
another
still
gay.
Together? Are Joey and Frank
yeah,
still
absolutely.
Together?
Yeah, absolutely. It's easily the most enduring relationship. Everyone's divorced in my extended family, everybody, except for Uncle Joey and Uncle Frank.
What do you think of Uncle Frank?
Great. Awesome. Great guy.
I'm in a very similar situation, I think. I don't have a lot of extended family that's lived near me because both my father and mother moved to the Bay Area to get away from their families, I think, in part. But my mother had moved to the Bay Area around the same time that her sister, Gail, moved to the Bay Area. And as I understand it, Gail wasn't always a lesbian, but I've always known her to be a lesbian. In my experience, she's always been a lesbian. And she's gone through these, and she's probably the family member, like the actual family member that I'm closest with. And she's gone through kind of this arc of lesbian-ness in the time that I've known her. When I was very young, she was a very militant lesbian who was against men.
Right.
And in fact, my mother is fond of sharing the story when she's angry at my Aunt Gail. After my mom told Gail that she was pregnant and it was a boy, she said, "Oh God, Gail! Oh God, Judith! How could you?"
Wow.
Anyway,
it's pretty intense.
It is. My aunt's a pretty intense woman, but I love her. We have a great relationship. And so at one point, I remember when I was, I'm going to say about.
Well, you love her despite the fact that that she lamented your birth.
Yeah, exactly. When I was, my mother and aunt have a stormy relationship.
Sure.
At one point when I was like seven or eight, my aunt made me an honorary girl.
Okay.
It's sort of just as a way to like pass me into her social circle.
Sure.
Like it was appropriate to hang out with me because I was so nice and polite or whatever. Yeah. Whatever qualities men are not supposed to have, that I was made an honorary girl. But
it must have been a big moment for you.
Yeah, it was. It was really sort of a passing the torch. It was, you know, as far as being made an honorary girl, it really can't compare with being made an honorary Filipino. So I could join the Filipino club in high school because the Filipino club, man, would their parents bring in some lumpia?
Yeah, you want to be in on that.
Some seriously good lumpia. My Aunt Gail met her partner, Deb, when I was about around that age that she made me an honorary girl, seven or eight. And Deb is probably my single favorite member of my entire family, and is just the greatest lady ever. And Yeah, and they easily have the most stable relationship of any pair of people in my family. I mean, there are some other there are a couple other stable relationships in my family, but for the most part, they're like this is spectacularly stable relationship, especially in contrast to my parents who got divorced when I was three. You know, like they really could barely, and I think they barely limped through those 3 years. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was the same kind of, although I have to say that in my family, you know, I don't know what my grandmother thought of it when she was alive. Mm-hmm. But I think she was probably reasonably comfortable with it. And I think that while my mother's family, who live mostly in Virginia, Northern Virginia, while they're mostly kind of uncomfortable with Gail's outrageousness, mm-hmm. just general, you know, kind of like Berkeley lesbianism.
Right.
It's not the lesbian part that necessarily bothers them.
Right.
It's just the cultural
anger.
She's over the anger. That's what part of the deal is. So she's no longer angry at all, and now she just is mostly focused on husky dogs.
Okay,
she's like the president of the Husky Dog Club, and she has like four. And her and Deb go out, and they have like this sled on wheels, and they mush with the dogs in the park, and with a sled on wheels because the dogs love to mush.
Wow.
Yeah, so there you go. So yes, Jordan has a gay uncle. Mm-hmm. I have a lesbian auntie. Here's one more question. This one is from Aaron. Jesse, would you ever consider doing something to cover your hair when you become bald? Toupee, plugs, a common hat? That's probably it means common hat, like a hat like Common. The rapper Common.
It's hard to say. The rap expert.
I'm going to say it means a hat like Common because Common's well known for his hats. The answer is one of the reasons that I'm so upset about becoming bald is not because I am becoming bald, which I kind of expected all along, but rather because what I was counting on was that I could hold out until I was maybe 35 or 40, kind of in that range before I was really started to become bald. Mm-hmm. And by that time, baldness would be cured. You know what I mean? Like I figured, you know, they've got a pill for your pee-pee. And they've got a pill for, you know what I mean? Like, I figured that they would have sorted this out by now. Clearly,
stem cells are all over the place.
Exactly. Clearly, there's money in it, right?
Like,
the pharmaceutical industry certainly isn't, you know, curing cancer or anything. Mm-hmm. Why haven't they figured out a solution to my baldness? So the answer is that I was counting on a medical solution. I can't imagine getting a hairpiece or getting a hair insertion surgery or whatever that's called. But not because I'm opposed to it, not because I'm opposed to the vanity of it, but rather because it looks awful.
Right.
And is also probably horrifically painful and dangerous. I would imagine anyone slicing holes in your head is probably both horrifically painful and somewhat dangerous because it's right next to your brain.
Good call.
But yes, I will. I mean, I already wear hats all the time anyway, so yes, I will be.
More hats.
I'll be wearing hats all the time. The key is to find a place where you are well known for wearing stylish hats, mm-hmm. As opposed to being well known for being sad because you insist on wearing a hat all the time. So it's sort of the Samuel L. Jackson versus what's that guy called?
He's a famous bald guy.
It's sort of the Samuel L. Jackson versus Ron Howard dichotomy.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Although Ron Howard, I think recently I've seen him bald-headed a few times.
Yeah, I have too.
Much to his credit. Mm-hmm. And it was time to let that go, Ron.
Keep it up.
Yeah. How's that for a segment?
That's a segment.
Personal questions for Jesse and Jordan.
Nice.
Welcome back to Jordan, Jesse, Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Continuing in our public service vein, we bring you now part two of our candidates forum, presidential candidates for President of the United States in 2008. We're giving a little something back to our community. Our next guest, also a candidate for President of the United States, you might know him as the conjuring barfly on Cheers or playing the role of celebrity humor columnist Dave Barry on the sitcom Dave's World. He recently moved back to New Orleans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina to set up his own jazz and magic club. His name's Harry Anderson. Harry, welcome to the Jordan Jesse Go. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
So I think we've started here just with the question. There must have been a point when you, in your career, decided maybe I want to do something more than just be a humorous magician. What, or maybe I'm underselling the significance of being a humorous musician. But what was inflection point in your career?
Really, it was when I opened the newspaper and I saw that my son was running for president. And I knew I could not let that happen.
That's your son is
Brian Feldman,
the screenwriter
of the Look Who's Talking series,
right?
And I said no.
How apropos!
I said it three times like that.
One, two, three times.
Right,
but with no gesture.
No gesture.
So this,
I don't even need a gesture. I get the message across just with my voice.
So this is a presidential bid, not necessarily for your own values, but more against his values?
Well,
believe
me, I'd love
there?
To be president. I have plenty of platforms, plenty of agendas that I'd love to put forth. But I'm also saying I wouldn't mind being sort of the Ralph Nader to his Al Gore, just making sure I steal enough votes from him to ensure that he's never elected.
Wow. He's running very, very hot in the polls.
Yeah, yeah. Right, I haven't checked the polls, but I presume he's number one.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a huge Look Who's Talking fan community that is,
they
have a grassroots.
They're very popular movies. And it's each one more popular than the previous.
It's those activists that really drive the early part of an election.
Right.
What is your strategy for potentially even winning this election? How do you think a Harry Anderson candidacy will unfold?
Well, it's going to start with bringing out a lot of my celebrity pals to sort of vouch for me. I'm going to be doing lots of magic tricks to impress people. Actually, I do want to correct something you said earlier. I've since moved to Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay.
I do not live in New Orleans anymore, so I'm running out of North Carolina. But I still own my club Oswald's in the French Quarter. I'm very proud of it. And I, basically figure, people love the work I've done. People see me all the time. They go, "Hey, Trash Mouth from It," and, I say, "Yes, that was me," and then I shake their hand.
But no photographs.
I'm sorry, of myself. Do I hand them a photograph of myself?
No. Do you don't allow them to take? I would just presume that they would want to take.
Yeah, people take photographs all the time of me. I'm good with it. I'm fine with that. Oh, hey, Jordan. I'm sorry. Looks like there's something behind your ear there.
Oh God, get it.
There you go.
A quarter.
A quarter.
Oh my God, this guy. At the risk of editorializing, he's got my vote.
He'll at least become president of Jordan's heart.
Yeah. Wow. Hopefully you can pull the quarter out of America's ear.
Yes. Yes. That's going to be we're throwing that around as one of our possible campaign slogans.
Wow. Now, I understand that this candidacy is largely about a personal vendetta against your son.
Yes, Brian Feldman, my son.
But you also mentioned that you have a broad and sweeping platform, issues that you care about.
Yes, very much
for
so.
The future of America. Can you introduce us to that platform?
Sure. Well, I was kiteboarding with John Larroquette the other day, and we were discussing certain issues that I would like to bring forth. And one of them was that, we all know what card tricks are, right?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't believe that they're illegal.
No, not at all.
But I was wondering if there's a way to make them more legal.
How so?
Maybe the government could reward you for doing a card trick rather than just not punishing you.
Maybe make not doing them illegal.
Yes. Yes. Everyone needs to know how to do a card. In fact, I'm going to do a card trick for you right now. Here.
Okay.
Jordan, why don't you take a card there?
All right. Shall I?
Don't tell me what it is.
Okay.
Now, just put it back in the deck there.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm going to shuffle it. You see I'm shuffling the deck.
Mm-hmm. He's shuffling the deck. Do sort of a play-by-play.
Jordan, why don't you reach into your lapel pocket there?
Okay, I don't see what that has to do with the four of clubs. This guy, I wish I could vote for him twice.
You can.
Good. Oh.
That's part of my agenda as well, is that me and no other candidate you are allowed to vote for twice.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, I think.
I think nothing has ever made more sense.
Uh-huh. So did Larroquette have any insight into the playing cards and card tricks issue?
He thought it was a great idea, and he asked if he could do the voiceover in my campaign ads, and I said, well, that would probably creep people out because he did the voiceover in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And
right.
I don't want to terrify people with my campaign ads.
Can I ask you this question? One of the things that you're doing that you've already announced in your campaign that's a real groundbreaker is you've already announced a running mate.
Yes.
Atypically early.
Yes, yes.
I think. Tell us about the choice that you've made in that regard and why you made it.
Well, I was having a tough time deciding. Either, obviously, Richard Mole was a top choice. But I decided to just go ahead and go with my old pal Dave Barry.
Uh-huh.
I find him humorous.
Right.
I like visiting Florida, where he lives.
It's a great state. Mm-hmm. Wonderful
it's
weather.
It's a swing state, you know, so he can bring me the votes out of that state.
He's splitting the ticket, I think they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've always enjoyed... that movie Big Trouble that I believe is based on one of his books.
Right, yeah, it is. It's based on one of his novels.
Yes, yes.
Now you played him in the TV version of his life.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of dynamic do you think that'll bring to the campaign?
Well, here's the thing. That we get along great because of that. It was a great show, four seasons. You know, Marky Post was on it sometimes. It was a lot of fun. But this is also another reason why I'm bringing him into the campaign is because my son, the screenwriter, Brian Feldman,
best known for writing the Look Who's Talking films.
Yes. Promised me and Dave Barry that he would write a feature version of Dave's World. Hmm. And we were both excited. We signed on the dotted line. I trusted him. He is my son after all.
Yeah.
When, you know, he went off, he wrote it for a few weeks. We were so excited. We were getting this deal all in place. And he comes back. Now, granted, the reason I was excited for him to write a Dave's World screenplay feature is because I thought it would be a vehicle for me to star in. And he brings it back, and it's just about a baby Dave Barry.
Hmm.
Wow.
And the thing is, it's not even written like the Look Who's Talking series where you can hear his thoughts. You can hear his thoughts, but only because of a machine that is attached with hooks to the baby's neck.
That's actually almost terrifying.
It is terrifying. Clearly no studio would make it. They tore up all the contracts. I don't know if that's legal, but they did it. I'm hiring Burt Fields to look into it. And we're screwed now. There's no way we're going to have a Dave's World. I don't know if you're aware of this, but at this point, Brian Feldman, Dave Barry, and myself, Harry Anderson, we're not exactly Hollywood elite anymore.
Right.
As we all once were.
With the exception of Dave Barry.
Who's kind of a constant in the entertainment industry.
He's an elite. He's a humorist elite. I'm going to say, as much as I love Big Trouble.
As a star, he's more of a B star.
Yeah, yeah. He's more of a influence.
Right. I mean, I would compare him to, he's less Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And more like on that sort of Jack Black level.
Mm-hmm.
He can get a movie made, certainly.
Can he?
I think he... Dave Barry, wouldn't you say? I mean, I'm further from the situation than you.
Not so much anymore. You know, there was all that 9/11 fallout off of BT. And
that's true.
Okay.
I think people are a little worried that anything he writes about will then turn into a national tragedy.
I'm a real Hollywood outsider. I'm no Lisa Gibbons. So.
Yeah, well.
Jordan, do you have any questions for Harry?
Yeah, actually, and we didn't really get a satisfactory answer when we talked to Brian, but I maybe wanted to ask different last names. Is this a Hollywood pseudonym, nom de plume kind of thing? Or
yeah, he took on a different last name at my request because I felt lots of shame toward him when he was young. I had him when I was 11, I should mention.
Okay.
That's why we're very close in age.
Mm-hmm.
And
good. Everything's falling into place.
I didn't
now.
Know much about raising a child. I would split the bubble gum that I got in my Topps baseball card packs with him and stuff like that. I was 11. Did I mention that?
But not the cards.
But not the cards.
That was your idea of parenting.
Yes. That was exactly. And as we grew older, you know, I was in high school. He was in elementary school. And sort of a rivalry developed, I guess you could say.
You were in college. He was in...
junior high.
In Magic College. He was in...
He was dropping out of high school.
Right.
And it just... I would say I did not like him as a person. Mm-hmm. He had a bizarre obsession with babies, constantly visiting the maternity ward at the hospital. He was kicked out of every hospital in the New Orleans area, I should tell you. He's blacklisted. So even if he falls ill, they will not accept him in the ERs there.
Wow.
He's got to go to Biloxi or...
Right. Or Mexico. And so basically, I said, look, Anderson, that's me. You can take Feldman as your last name. No other celebrity has that last name. And he said, sure.
Let me ask you this. One of the obvious weaknesses of the Feldman campaign, which I think some people are comparing to a juggernaut, there are those who have compared him already just a few months into Reagan.
Yes.
In terms of his communicative ability, his obvious, you know, his marvelous sense of humor, his, you know, passionate commitment to the issues.
Mm-hmm.
But one of his weaknesses has been the Christian right.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder... there are those in the Christian right who also see you as potentially problematic because of your connection with, you know, I don't want to go overboard on this, but the black arts.
Yes, no. I've had a lot of trouble dealing with the Christian right. I haven't helped myself, I would say. They frequently refer to what I do as being the black arts, yes.
Uh-huh.
And I clarify, I say it's black magic.
Uh-huh.
And I say that...
It's more of a craft.
Yeah, it's a craft powered by powers that Satan has given me.
Right.
I believe in Satan. I believe he is our true Lord.
Right.
I'm Harry Anderson from Night Court, by the way. Those of you people just tuning in, this is Harry Anderson. I worship Satan.
That is a really bold revelation to make.
Yeah. I mean, do you think...
Well, where do you think I get my magic powers? I didn't pull that quarter out of your ear with something I read in the Bible.
Sleight of hand, yeah.
How many people here have read the Bible and learned a card trick in it? There's no card tricks described anywhere in the Bible.
I'm trying to remember, but
no
I don't
No illusions
think so.
Described anywhere, no conjures.
I remember some stuff about shekels.
That is true. But that's more of a Dave Barry funny area
right,
of the Bible.
Right, I gotcha.
This is a so, but you know, you take Satan's Bible, and it's filled. It's filled with tricks. It's filled with demons you can summon, illusions I can create, little familiars I can conjure to do my bidding.
So is that should I be interpreting this as? I mean, in some ways, a revelation of faith. In
yes.
other ways,
yes.
Almost...
I will go on the record as saying I, Harry Anderson, am a Satanist.
Wow.
But in other ways, it seems almost like a threat of some kind.
I'm still trying to woo the Christian right. Don't get me wrong, boys.
Oh, okay.
Well, okay, so you're not writing them off completely.
No, I'm figuring despite our 180-degree difference in beliefs,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh. Maybe if they like my magic tricks, they'll still vote for me.
And hey, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you think that you and the Christian right might agree on a certain favorite singer, Mr. Mel Torme?
Yes, Mel Torme, frequent guest on Night Court, 9 episodes, I believe. I go to the Christian right and I go, we both love Mel Torme. Let me try to cast a spell to bring him back to life. And they say, no. don't do that. That is against God's will. And then I go, come on. And they say.
And they laugh.
They laugh. And they go, but seriously, no. And I go, all right, fine.
Well, can I ask you this question, Harry?
Sure.
It's been really exciting to get a look into your campaign. It sounds like it's almost in its nascent stages. You've just announced.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're headed out on the road and you're going to be doing maybe some street magic.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think we might be able to check in with you periodically during
Sure. I'd love to. Yeah, definitely. And look, I don't want to run a negative campaign here, but I am going to without hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
My opponent, my son, Brian Feldman, he wrote the Look Who's Talking movies. I have here a study.
And, I hear it, yeah.
Let me just take a look at it. It says 100%.
Now, this is a scientific study?
Well, yeah, a scientific study. Of all the women...
Double blind.
Look, this is fact-checked across
the board. Peer-reviewed?
Definitely. Like, by like twice as many peers as normally would review a study. And look, of all the women who went to see Look Who's Talking 2, T-O-O, and Look Who's Talking Now in the theaters, who were pregnant at the time of viewing them, 100% of them, 100%, suffered from severe postpartum depression.
Wow. And you think that's because of the content of the movie somehow?
Yeah, I know it is.
So how would you change that?
I would make sure my son is not president is how I'm going to change that. I can't change the past. Believe me, I've cast many a spell attempting to.
Right.
And it doesn't work out. But I can change the future. And I can change the future by ensuring that my crazy son does not allow his bizarre baby speak machines to create a wave of postpartum depression across the land that I love so dear.
Well, wow. Harry Anderson from Television's Night Court, Cheers, and from
Dave's World.
Dave's World, of course.
Trash Mouth and It.
Mm-hmm. Trash Mouth and the movie It. Thank you so much for coming on, Jordan Jessica.
I also host a Saturday Night Live.
It was a great episode.
Thank you. Well, thank you, guys. You guys are wonderful hosts. And, look, what's this I have coming out of both of your ears?
Holy cow, a balloon animal.
Yeah.
Look, it's one donkey and one elephant.
Both of our favorite animals.
Yeah. Well, that is our time for Jordan Jesse Go this week. I like how I'm pretending that there's some sort of time limit that we have to stick to, and we didn't
like, we would like to talk more, but we're just out of time. We're plumb out of time.
We're actually what it is we're lazy and we're out of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Action items for this week's program. Number one, if you have questions for our presidential candidates, we're going to welcome them back on the show periodically. Give us a call at 206-984-4FUN. It's 206-984-4FUN. Or email us at jjgo@maximumfund.org. And I'll share with us your questions about these two candidates' priorities for the future of the United States. You're adding something to the high five contest.
Yeah. So we've already got the standard prizes, your t-shirts, your DVDs for the top three placers. I'm going to add a specialty prize, for a genre prize. I have a copy of an Xbox 360 game unopened. This is a new copy of the Xbox 360 game, Project Gotham Racing 3. Which is
sounds like a great game.
Highly lauded in the video game press.
It involves racing a car around. It involves illegal street racing.
Yes, it's if you liked The Fast and the Furious,
or Too Fast, Too Furious,
or Fast and the Furious Venice Adventure. That's not.
I believe that was the name of the third
Venice,
film.
Yeah.
Yes, Venice Adventure.
Then you will like this
they
game.
They were driving those kind of combination boat cars.
Right. Fast and the Furious boat car.
You know, like the Duck Tour.
Sure.
You know what I'm talking about.
So you don't have to accumulate a lot of points. This will go to a specific winner. And we were thinking of the category to give this prize to. And we kind of had two ideas. So it's either or. either the person to include the most people in a high five. This is most high five. That's what we wanted to do, but then we decided that you know, this prize is only good if you have an Xbox 360 or, I guess, another system that you can take it back and exchange a game for. So if you have a good Xbox 360-related high five, then you will get the prize.
Either one of those. And I should be clear, we'll pick the overall winner when we get it between those two.
Yeah.
Between the person with the best Xbox 360 one and the person with the most high fives. And I'll make sure the other person gets a prize as well.
Absolutely. So prizes all around, but yeah, so some you can high five while playing Xbox, can
high five your Xbox.
Right.
High five your Sega Genesis.
Sure. So go to it. Go to it, high fivers.
We'll be back next week on Jordan Jesse Go.
Our theme music, Love You, is provided by The Free Design and their record label, Light in the Attic Records.